You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Connor Fields. He's an artist living and working in Los Angeles. Connor, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about your work. I'm really fascinated by the variety of things you do and how you approach work. But what is it that you're working on right now in your studio or involved in?
Right now, I'm working on a body of work. Materially, it's a lot of combining of synthetic materials like styrofoams and plastics with more natural materials like some sticks and sand and stuff like that, and sort of combining them to create different sort of objects. Like I've been carving into styrofoam blocks to make them look sort of like engraved marble, and I've started aging them, as well as of course the dumpster is getting emptied right now outside the window, so the engraved sort of marble. I've also been making drawings, ink on Tyvek rather than just paper. Those are starting to be a lot of architecture, sort of covered with leaves, but drawing them sort of in a stylized way. The leaves are more of a pattern rather than a more realistic approach. One thing that's happening that's new in the studio, I've been twisting and making my own ropes. I started with garbage bags, and I've been doing different kinds of tarps and things like that. So twisting my own rope and using that to make sculptures, stretching it between things or wrapping around things, that work's actually really new. So still not sure really what it's all about, but it's exciting. So that's where I'm at.
That sounds
right now.
Exciting. And are you doing video as well? I know you've done a good amount of video work in the past. Are you still making videos, or is that not part of your practice now?
Not right now. I'm definitely not ruling it out. For me, the medium of any piece sort of follows what it needs to be. So when I made those videos, it was just the very beginning of actually this body of work that I'm doing now. And the videos sort of helped me place the work and sort of set them within a narrative. But that narrative has become a little less important. So at least, a literal depiction of that narrative has become less important to me. So I've been drawn more towards making sculptures again. But in the future, if I have an idea for video, I wouldn't hesitate to, I wouldn't want to limit myself.
And are you showing these works anywhere at the moment, or will you be?
I will be. Since I graduated from CalArts with my master's 2 years ago, I showed a bunch of pieces at the Torrance Art Museum 2 years ago. That was great. I worked with Max Presnell, the curator there, and the show was called Prep School, Preparing for the End of the World, and it was a really fun show, and it was nice. I got to show a lot of my pieces together, which was nice because they could like give context for each other. The pieces could sort of set the context. So that was great. And then next year I will be in a show curated by Adrian Rosenfeld. He has a project going on called Annual Exhibitions. He just had his first one. They're going to be pop-ups once a year. He just finished one, the first one with Wyatt Kahn. It was a great show. It was, you know, the top floor of a building in downtown Los Angeles. It was really well done. So I'm excited to be doing that next year. It's going to be me and Eric Hubisch and Leonard Herzlmeier. He's a painter from Germany or Austria. So that's what's coming up. So I'm looking forward to that. And feels good. I've almost a year, so.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
And are you planning on teaching too? Are you doing other work at this time?
I would love to teach. I haven't been working towards that actively. I feel like, you know, at this point, art-wise, I'm just committed to being in the studio as much as possible. And then from there, getting out and showing it more. But I would love to teach at some point, but nothing right now.
I mean, I'm not saying you have to, but I mean, in other words, just to make a living, is it hard just to get by in LA on your work? Or are you selling work now?
I'm not selling work. I have some jobs, of course. Getting by in Los Angeles as an artist can totally be hard. Part-time jobs,
so
freelancing, and then just making enough ends meet, and then still having the energy to come back to the studio and make work. But I wouldn't really want to be doing anything else, though. So.
Right. And after that show, I would think that show was a success last year. The works that you had at the museum. What was the reception like for that? Were you getting a lot of feedback from that particular show?
Yeah. It went well. People seemed to like it. I was excited. It was a good opportunity for me to show people outside of my circle maybe what I was doing, especially since it was right after coming from CalArts. Grad school can get a little insular, so it was nice to get out. And I got a great response. Max was really supportive. The whole team at the museum was supportive. Even on the writing, it was good, to write a bit of text for the work. And even on that, I got really great feedback from people. So.
And what works were in that? Well, what works in that show? I mean, are there the ones that are on your page, which people will see because there's a link to it in this interview? But was it Aqueduct and My Face? Was it those works? Stream?
Yeah. So some of the specific pieces on the website were in the show, and then there were some pieces in the show that aren't actually on the website. But My Face was in the show. The Axe piece was in the show. And there was a couple, I actually had like a nice sort of private-ish, like just a nook in the gallery that was all mine. So I was able to really sort of fill that space with these objects.
So let's talk about my face a little bit, because that's a pretty interesting process, dissolve styrofoam and sand. And, when I looked at that, it kind of made me smile. It looked like a cat litter box. Is that how it's intended to look, or does the image just kind of make it look that way?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, that's really funny. I mean, I like that. I like that kind of sense of humor, and it also, that's how it was intended. And the medium seems really interesting, dissolved styrofoam.
Yeah, the medium is fun. It sort of came out of, like I said, I've been working with these materials. So putting a limitation to the materials just forced me to get a little more creative and experiment with them. So I realized that you can melt styrofoam with acetone, and it turns it back into this goopy plastic. So with these pieces, like my face, I would dissolve a bunch of styrofoam. And for this one, I mixed in a bit of powdered charcoal to give it a marbled effect. And then basically just press what I want to cast into sand, because that's just sort of the easiest, most one-to-one quick mold-making method. You know, you press your hand into the sand, and then you fill that. So it's this really satisfying, immediate sort of cause and effect. So
you fill that with a kind of dissolved styrofoam, you mean? The impression of the hand?
Yeah, exactly. So I would press my hand in the sand, and then I would take that goopy, dissolved styrofoam, and then just pour it in and let it dry. And it comes out as this, it comes back as a hard, rigid plastic. So it's
that's fascinating. So when you're doing something like your face, you're obviously kind of shaping and molding the sand more, but you're working essentially with a sand?
Yeah. Yeah, for my face, the process was a little more involved because I couldn't really just push my face all the way into the sand, so I had to make a mold and then of my face and then push into the sand and sculpt the sand a little bit and manipulate it. I've made one other piece or a couple other pieces with that process that were more one to one. There's one with my hand and one with my foot as well. So I feel that the immediate sort of process is pretty important to it. You know, this sort of one to one immediate thing.
I mean, almost like printmaking, you know, or monoprints or something. You don't really get a second chance. It's the mold is destroyed after you pour the styrofoam
into
it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, because for me, at least in the making of things, it's important not to be too precious with something. You know, it wouldn't, at least with this, with what I'm how I'm working now, it wouldn't make sense to, you know, spend hours on making this perfect mold and things. You know, I want the process to be very handmade, and then that ends up coming through in the work. You know, the little inconsistencies, or, you know, showing, you know, the hand is visible in these things. That feels pretty important.
And it also has this incredible quality, like I think you were talking about the other one, my fist, the one that's also dissolved styrofoam. It looks like marble, right? It looks like stone, really, of some kind.
Yeah. One thing that happens when you cast with sand, the sand gets trapped in the surface, so that gives it an interesting texture. And then and I've also been crushing up charcoal and mixing that in and trying to get it to get like these marbled lines of charcoal in the white plastic. So yeah, that's exactly what I was going for.
You know, and that one also, and it was intended, but also has a sense of humor to me. It feels a little bit like, you know, fist bump a little bit if it's mounted on the wall. That's
well,
cool.
It, you
really
know,
like...
it could be read a couple ways. You know, it could be fist bump, or it could be a more aggressive, you know, just a fist. But yeah, that humor has always been important. You know, it's hopefully not only funny, but you know, it's got to have a little bit of a sense of humor for me.
Yeah, I think that's kind of important. Or, you know, I enjoy that. I mean, I like work that I think your use of materials, and there's a lot of you know, I think commentary on some things happening here, but the there's an aspect to it that's humorous, which allows entry in a way, you know, like the axe, which I guess was also displayed, you know, that that's a beautiful piece, and to me it's you know, about that kind of mythic. I mean, it may not be, but this is my association with it, the kind of sword into stone that you can't pull out unless you're, I don't know, what is it, King Arthur or something?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It doesn't come out of the stone. Here's this, and I mean, that may not have been your intention, but I look at that, and I have that kind of association of kind of wanting to pull it out and thinking it's impossible to pull it out or you'd have to know something special. And at the same time, because of the way those blocks are broken, I can see that it's styrofoam, and then there's something odd about the fact that how can that even sort of stand up, or you know what I mean? There's something to me about weight in that, about a story, a narrative, and I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but the kind of humor also of this axe in styrofoam allows me to kind of get into or explore whatever that story or those layers might be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think humor is a great way to get people to access things, and you know, not just in art and everything, but yeah, in the work, that's these sort of wonky logics, you know, like that axe doesn't look like it should be standing like that. So that's just like, even that is just some almost physical humor, visual puns on, you know, logic and physics. But yeah, you're right with the narrative. There is a narrative behind it, and I'm trying not to be too specific, so that, like you said, that the viewer can take it in their own direction from whatever sort of hints I'm giving them, whatever snapshots of that narrative. So. But yeah.
Right. My association was some kind of story, but it could have easily been about, you know, my experience with chopping wood with an axe and how, you know, this is such an odd material to see an axe embedded in that it changes what I think an axe would be for. I'd never use an axe to chop styrofoam, if that is styrofoam, or, you know, so
right.
It draws me into the material, like what is this material and what's going on here, which is a big part of what you're doing, right? The Tyvek too, they're really unusual materials that you're kind of introducing to people in some way, it seems.
Yeah, definitely. And like with the axe, you know, a lot of the work does actually just really come from the materials. Like the axe actually started with the axe head because I had this big chunk of, I guess it was acrylic or plexiglass or something. It was, you know, like 2.5 inches thick, which is, you know, this 10 by 20 sheet of, like 10 by 20 inches sheet of plastic was like really heavy, big, thick piece. And I realized I could chip away at it, and it started to look like flint napping. So from there, I made the axe head, and the whole piece came from there. But it started with just playing with the materials, seeing what I could make them do that they weren't necessarily intended for. So like, even the use of materials, I think, if not funny, are a little clever or, you know, unexpected.
Yeah, I think so too. Let me ask you a little bit about just the experience of CalArts and an MFA. You know, I talk to different artists coming out of MFA programs sometimes, you know, with a lot of different experiences. What was your experience in terms of, I guess, you know, if it can be kind of summed up, the MFA program, were there highs and lows, and did you feel that it really helped in a way? You know, I mean, I'm thinking of like a woman I talked to the other day that said I couldn't work after CalArts for 2 years, you know, and she was having trouble finding, like, as she put it, you know, her place in the art world, and was kind of confused. And I know there's a variety of experience. Sometimes crits and, you know, are helpful to people. Sometimes it's the opposite. What was your experience there in terms of how it helped your practice? This isn't too broad.
I mean, you couldn't have said it better than highs and lows. I mean, grad school's intense. It's a lot, you know. It's this amazing time where you get to spend 2 years, like, really hopefully focusing on your work and expanding. But it's intense, you know. Two years of spending time on your work, you go a little crazy, and you're having all of these voices in your ears. Some are, I mean, almost all of them are incredibly genius. Like, everyone at CalArts, so smart and so generous with their knowledge, but it can be overwhelming, you know. For a long time while I was there, it sort of hindered me from making things, because I would, I got so used to hearing all of this analysis that I started to analyze my work before I was done, or before I even started a piece. I would start to pick apart what it was, and so it took a while for me to realize, to go back to, like, how I make work best, and take the good things from what I learned from people, and take those and not get too caught up, and just try and let it flow. So, yeah, after school, it was intense, you know. It's been 2 years now, so I'm starting to feel a little more normal again, but one thing is that I didn't actually have much trouble making work after I got out. I actually started making a lot of work because I felt more free. Though, you know, like I said, CalArts is great, and I made a lot of work there that I was really happy with. So I made a lot of great friends, and the conversations you get to have, you can have any sort of conversation you're looking to have, you know, just gotta start it. So it was a great place.
Are the friends that you met there still part of, like, a group that keeps in touch? That's something that, you know, is often held out by different people as one of the advantages to an MFA program, is a group of supportive friends after school.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, both on, you know, on several levels. Like, you know, at this point I can go out to openings in LA, and I know that I'll see people that I know and I like, and it's, you know, it feels really nice to have this community at large in the city and beyond. And then on a closer level, yeah, right now I'm in a studio with three other guys that I graduated with, Stephen Nydick, I think you actually interviewed his uncle Warren recently. But I'm with Steve Nydick, Chandler McWilliams, and Ben Dean. And it's really great to still have these guys that I'm so close with, and we know our work, and we can, you know, talk about each other's work or not talk about each other's work. But it's really great that we can have that little slice of that community that we built up in CalArts and keep it for ourselves. So. The one thing that's interesting, though, is that, you know, one of the guys that Ben Dean is another guy in the studio, he's totally getting out of art. He's going back to school for med school. And then another one of my friends is going back, two of my friends are going back for therapy. So it's something interesting happens when people graduate from CalArts. Some people stay, and then some people, after analyzing it, are like, realize I want to do something a little more tangible, but the community is great, and the people that are going off and doing other things, I think, are really brave and interesting. And
you mean at some point people are also making the decision a few years out of school that this this isn't for me or this is for me. You know, some people just aren't going to continue doing what they're doing, in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, one thing that happens in the arts education is there's really no, this isn't just CalArts, this is across the board pretty much, there's very little practical teaching of what it's going to be like after school. You know, when you're there, they're like, focus on the work, be in the studio, but not a lot gets said about being a professional artist. So when you get out, it's overwhelming.
And if you were asked to give a course or a lecture or just, you know, a few lines about that to artists, how do you think artists should be prepared? Like, what do you think you should have been taught ideally or about getting out that might have made the transition a little easier for you?
Well, you know, I'm still figuring that out. But just things like how gallery systems work and like to work the gallery, what's that like? Or even things like taxes. The first year I came out and totally overwhelmed doing this whole new, you know, it wasn't just a W-2 anymore. It's wildly complicated. And just having a conversation, you know, I don't know, other than like taxes and gallery, but there's a lot that goes along with being a professional artist and having some sort of guidance or even a warning, you know, a warning that like, hey, it's going to be really hard when you're done. When you get out of school, it's going to be really hard. Good luck. But it's not even, it's talked about very little.
That's true, and it seems to be almost taboo to be talked about, you know. And all the big schools, you know, they're not talking about professional practice, so to speak. It seems to be something that's beside the point. Yet, yeah, a lot of people in all fields, and I've talked to artists who have gone on to like amazing careers, but their first few years out were often devastating, you know, they just couldn't find their way. And we're lucky really that, you know, in most of their estimate that they just had some friends to hang out with to, you know, to help them along the way and not really help them, but just to be there as opposed to being, you know, alone in all of it.
Yeah.
So then what did you, I mean, I know you're still trying to figure it out and it's only been a few years, but you know, you have had a show and another one. What do you see as one thing that you're learning in terms of navigating in this world of freelance and still making art?
Right. I mean, a lot of it, I'm learning that, you know, a lot of it comes, you know, they've always said, you know, it's who you know, which I always thought was so gross, you know, like the idea of being networky or just trying, you know, anytime you engage someone, trying to figure out what they can do for you. But that's not necessarily what it has to mean, you know. When I go out and I do a job, if I'm doing art handling or whatever I'm doing, even if I'm just going out, those relationships you build with people, that's what it's all about, you know. And it's not networky. It's like, I want to meet curators and artists and, you know, these creative people in my field. So things have come from that, you know, coming from honest discussions with people and, you know, having studio and then inviting them for studio visits and building relationships like that. So, you know, and trying to do it as earnestly and honestly and as not networky as possible for me so far. But,
yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Connor, thanks a lot for talking with us today. I really appreciate your time on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.